you believe in things that go bump in the night? Night Watchers at nightwatchers.info. Whether you're an amateur or a professional paranormal investigator, the Night Watchers want you to investigate some of the country's most haunted places. The Night Watchers want you. Already in a group? Perfect. Groups are welcome. Join today at nightwatchers.info. Night Watchers at nightwatchers.info. The future of paranormal investigation.
I'd like to share a recent experience where I strongly believe that I encountered a shadow person.
When I looked, it was January 5th, 2046.
I just, you know, I want to find an explanation for it. I want to rule it out as, you know, something that was logical.
There are many things we have yet to learn about and understand. Join us here at Supernatural Existence and learn about the many mysteries of the universe. Feel free to subscribe via any of your favorite podcast directories, including iTunes, or check us out on the Supernatural Existence website at www.globeye.com. The mysteries are waiting to be understood.
I really want to see something supernatural with my own eyes, not hear it or think I heard it or anything like that, actually see it with my own eyes, capture it on camera, hear something weird or something like that.
Hey, this is Lena.
And this is Paul with the SEPS Paranormal Podcast. Check us out twice a month where we will be discussing our most recent paranormal investigations here in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
You can find us at www.sepsparanormal.podshow.com or go to our website, sepsparanormal.org.
Or you can subscribe to iTunes. Just type in SEPS Paranormal in the search field. Come by and check us out.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Oh, yes, I actually made it in the studio and in front of the controls in time.
We're so proud of you.
I'm so happy. I don't have to get yelled at yet. Well, not too bad, anyway.
Okay.
You guys, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
I'm Bonnie.
No, I've been yelling at you guys for like the last 5 minutes, and I was on mute. I forgot completely about it.
Oh, that's totally
that's
right.
Great.
Yay! We like it that way, Scott.
I know.
I actually prefer it.
Who's that on the line, guys?
Yes, Bonnie. Tell us about our next guest.
Featuring a musical soundtrack by Soulpath, a band featured here on Ghostly Talk.
Yeah.
Nick Ashron and other artists. Dragons and Rings is the first in a series of thought-provoking and unique films by Steve Mitchell, which link the most up-to-date thoughts in quantum theory with the placement and structure of stone circles and sacred sites. His website is dragonsandrings.com. And with that, welcome to Ghostly Talk, Steve.
Hi, thanks very much.
And it's great to have you on Ghostly Talk, especially with, you know, the film and of course, all your ideas. We got quite a list from you, things to talk about. And I've studied all kinds of this stuff. And I have to say, Steve, I never really got it. You know, I mean, because invisible ley lines, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I do tease, though, M59 here in north of Detroit seems to have a ley line that takes effect at 4 p.m. every day. And it's really strong for about an hour, and then it goes away, and it just, like, stops traffic dead for no reason, because there's never an accident. It just stops traffic dead. And so we tease that about being a ley line, but I do understand about that kind of stuff. But I'd like to know, what got you into it, though, first?
Oh, gosh, that's a tricky question. Everyone asks me this, and it's really hard. So many times I answer this, and I have to keep thinking, why, how, what? Because it's really important, isn't it? I think when you create a piece, whether it's a book, whether it's a film or whatever, it comes from somewhere deep inside you. And it's quite important to kind of get out where it's come from. For me, I guess a lot of it comes from early childhood. I lived at that time, where my parents still live, a very kind of beautiful part of England, just off of the Ridgeway, which is an approximately 80-85 mile long piece of kind of Roman type road pathway, what you want to call it, that is littered with kind of Celtic pagan shrines, hill forts, stone circles, you name it, it's up there. And that was within kind of walking distance of where I lived. So I guess I lived in this kind of countryside. During my youth, during my kind of early days, you kind of get used to certain things going on around you, be they what people might call kind of strange events, whatever. And being questioning, I've always kind of thought, well, is there a scientific aspect to all of this? Because the other aspect of myself, apart from being a musician, a writer, a filmmaker, being very creative, is that I studied science at, up until university level, and was looking for that point where the esoteric, where the strange events, where the paranormal, if you like, actually met science, and could they explain each other? And that became, I guess, a guiding light for me up until, you know, now and obviously into the future as well as I carry on working in this area.
Yeah, because I just don't, I mean, I understand quite a bit of science. I understand quite a bit of parascience or you know, the strange, the supernatural, whatever. But it's extremely difficult even then. I mean, I can come up with, you can ask me, oh, what about a ghost? And I could come up with like 10 different reasons.
Yeah.
I can parrot things out. I can tell you what I believe. I can tell you all these different things. But with ley lines, for example, and stone circles and things like that, I just have a complete failing because it just, to me, they both defy explanation. I mean, I've seen it, but you can sit there with a map and you can show me a map of England and you can say, here's where this is, here's where that is, here's where that is.
Yeah.
And they do appear to line up. It really does look that way. But why? How did ancient folks know this? I mean, they had to know it instinctively. They didn't have GPS or whatever.
No.
There was no way. And so it just defies my concept, my grasp. I just don't have a grasp of it.
Yeah, one of the things that comes out of the film, I guess, and one of the things that I've kind of perceived and noticed, and it's something you can kind of pick up if you look at very old tribes. For example, if you look at the Bushman tribe in Africa, they date themselves back tens of thousands of years. So their natural ability, if you like, to work with the land, to understand energies and to be part of the land, carries on until now. So you can actually see this working. And the deal, as far as I can kind of perceive, is first of all, to understand, as you say, what ley lines are, and whether we can get that into an hour's worth of talk, let alone a couple of minutes, is tricky. And without some nice, pretty pictures and some kind of gorgeous music to kind of back it all up as well. In a nutshell, everyone is aware of this concept that the world is made of energy, that matter comes from energy, that the material world comes from this energy. And once you start looking at the energetic components, from a scientific perspective, you can see that, to cut a long story short, this energy works much in a kind of matrix-like sense, in that it's like building blocks, literally square blocks, and this is like a very simplified version, so don't want anyone kind of emailing me or ringing me up and going, oh no, that's absolutely wrong, because it's going to get off very quickly. But if you can imagine, literally building block. And at each corner of the building block, there's a kind of point of energy which is joined along the length of each of the sides of the building block. And all of those join together into, you know, very minuscule kind of things that form this kind of matrix of lines and lines and lines and lines of energy, all of which, between them, function in such a way that they kind of... make themselves, can't think of the right word, there's a word for this. they react against each other to make themselves more powerful, basically. Mm-hmm. So you get kind of bigger and bigger lines building up, a bit like in the body where we have kind of veins and arteries and so forth. So the structure, the physical structure of the world is built upon this kind of matrix of energy lines which join A through to B to C. So that's the first point of call. And within these energy lines, everything that we see, everything that we touch, everything that we feel is an element or part of that energy. So, for example, water is essentially energy. It's matter that's kind of vibrating, that therefore is energy. And we're able, because we're also energetic beings, we are able effectively to tune into this energy, to pick this energy up, because it's around us all the time. It affects us. It's a bit like sound is around us all the time. We hear sound. Light is around us all the time. We hear light. But what in effect has happened is that because there's so much stimulation, so many varieties of energy, if you like, for us to attune to pick up to react to, for means of survival, we've had to essentially teach ourselves not to receive that energy, or if you like, to block it out when it comes in, to ignore it, to compartmentalize it, to say we don't need that information. And like I said, if you go back to the Bushman tribe, you'll find that they, for example, are able to perceive where water is. But they say that water to them smells. They smell water. They know where it is because it smells, if that makes sense. Now, we would find it very hard to find water by smelling it because, A, we're surrounded by it all the time. So we've kind of got rid of that sense. We've taken that sense out. So what we have to do is, if you like, cut back to those senses somehow. And the easiest way to cut back to those senses is by using techniques like, for example, dowsing, where we're able to tune into energy sources and to very carefully asking the right questions, get the right answers, and be able to find out, if you like, about the energetic part of the world. But my belief is that if you trace back through time, 2000s, tens of thousands of years, you'll find that we were far more aware of, if you like, these energetic structures in terms of the fact that they were kind of almost like part of the real world, in that they felt as though they were there. We would sense them and we would just acknowledge them as being there.
Well, it's interesting, Steve, because the there's actually a couple things out of that explanation, which was a really good explanation. But one of them is the invisible lines. Okay, now I did indeed see there was a science experiment that I think everybody in the United States had to do. What they did is in junior high, I think it was, they took a simple piece of paper and a magnet and some iron shavings, right? And then you sprinkle the iron shavings over the piece of paper and it makes this pattern. It makes a figure eight pattern kind of thing. And really you got to visualize, which you can't tell that there's a field there. I mean, you can tell because, you know, it's attracted to metal and other magnets and stuff. So yeah, you're playing with that. So you know there's something, but if it's just away from other metal and you're just hanging on to it, there's like no other instinct or whatever that thing is any special at all. But then you can actually visualize it by putting a piece of paper over the magnet and doing the iron shavings, and then wow, you can see this magnetic field, you know, and it's just absolutely, you know, it's mind-boggling. It's physically there. You can actually see it when you do the metal shaving on paper thing, and so that lends a lot of things where maybe these Bushmen do have a sense. The other thing is when you said they can smell water, it's not the same thing, I know, but there is something about I can't tell you how many times I've been outside and, well, four maybe total, and you can, I'm a geek, I'm a computer nerd, I can't help it.
Yes, he is.
So I don't
vouch for that.
I don't go outside as much as possible, but when you're outside, and if the weather's going to change.
Yes.
You know,
I'm with this, by the way, too, Doug. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, you get a lot of little clues. Like, I'm sure you can, your mind probably can see differences in the clouds. They can see differences in the way the wind is blowing. Maybe the backs of the leaves are showing instead of the fronts. The air does sometimes smell different if there's going to be a big rainstorm of some kind, and it
also,
just
after it's rained, we all know that sense, that smell of rain, that dew, that kind of, you know, when it's like the fresh mown grass smell, isn't it? There's something in the air, and like you say as well, there's something in the air when a storm's about to brew, that pressure sense as well. There's so many senses kicking off.
So we do get these, and it's interesting because it sounds like even though we're like the Bushmen. The tribes that you're talking about with, you know, they live in nature. They're like a part of nature. It's their every day. For me, it's like I go out of the house and, oh my gosh, I'm nature until I get to the car. And, and, you know, so I've probably lost a lot of my, you know, in tuneship or whatever with, you know, these forces. But at the same time, I can recognize times when even I can sense that difference. I can sense that there's, you know, there's weather coming or there has been some weather or there's, you know, I can sense those changes even though I've not paid attention to the outdoors since, you know, college. So So I mean, I do get it that the Bushmen and other folks may be more in tune and may have the ability to know these things, and I do get this the lines that of lines of power or lines, yeah. In the case of magnetism, it's lines of force. You know, it's.
I'm gonna throw a spanner into the works there, because
yay.
This is something that comes out at the end of Dragons and Rings, rather than something that's kind of specifically focused in there, in a way. One of the first things that is kind of important is the lines, because part of the function of the lines is simple physical. It's simple fact that they are trackways. They are literally, we are going to go from here to here. What's the easiest way to get from here to here in a straight line?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Watkins kind of picked that up in the old straight track. It was Dion Fortune back in the 30s who was writing, I think I'm going to quote it absolutely wrong because it wasn't the Sea Priestess, but it was one of her other books. She was writing about these energetic lines, and it was a fictional work that she was writing. It wasn't kind of meant to be kind of physical, if you like. And everyone jumped up and down on this and went, "Oh, ley lines, energy lines! Wow, this must be absolutely amazing." If you go out and actually start kind of looking at these in a physical way, there's a number of kind of things that come out of this. You can look at the work of, for example, Miller, where he kind of went up and down England and tracked the Mary and the Michael lines, which are kind of curled line that incidentally take in part of the Ridgeway that I was talking about earlier on. My observation is that, in a way, the lines themselves come out of the placement of structures, the placement of stones, the placement of things, if you like, into the earth, maybe even on purpose, in such a way that these lines, these major lines of energy, if you like, develop as a result, rather than the fact that they were placed on the lines. Does that make sense?
Well, you know what, that actually goes, because I mean, yes, I've studied ley lines and places of power and stone rings. Mm-hmm. I haven't studied it to the you know, extent that you have. I of course, am, you know, a jack of all trades and a master of none.
but, I can vouch for that, too.
I'm trying to do that as well with you.
but I've also studied, there is this theory, and I subscribe to it. I really believe that there is a certain amount of, life is what you make of it, okay, or life is what you make it, and that we can control our environment. And so, therefore, I think that humans and our conscious thoughts and efforts and what we do, and to an extent our subconscious thoughts that we don't even know we're having, right, mm-hmm. consciously, that it does affect the world around us, and it can. And you can purposely have a good day or purposely have a bad day. You can change a bad day into a good day. Sometimes you can't. I know that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just like way bad.
It's
you just, cannot change into a good
it's
day.
It's about looking at things, isn't it?
But
yeah.
Exactly. And you can totally, you can change the mood of a room if you hype yourself up, you know, before walking into that room. And you can, you know, you can affect the world around you. And I think that people can. And so therefore, if, you know, some ancient folks or whatever decided, okay, this is a really depressing place. We're going to build a stone circle here. It's going to be a place of partying and worship. It'll be fabulous. We'll love it. They could really affect the entire area, the energy around an area just by doing something that simple.
Real quick, though, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I have a question. Kenny asked a question in the chat room.
I was on a roll, Kenny.
And it was a little while back. So I want to ask it. Kenny wanted to clarify something that he had spoken about earlier. He wants to know if you were saying that paranormal activity is based off a product of the physical world.
Say that, run that past me again, because I probably said something like that. I open my mouth, I switch it on, and off it goes, and then I have to check back and say, did I really say that?
It's okay. He just wanted to know if you were saying that paranormal activity is based off a product of the physical world.
I think the two tie in together, but you have to define paranormal activity as well, and therein, for me, lies an issue, because we get caught up in so many kind of, what's the right word? People kind of take too much on board. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of, a lot of paranormal activity, let's get it right, is our perception, is what goes on in our head, is our kind of version of reality. Now that's not knocking in a way our kind of need, our kind of, how should we put it, our spiritual desire to kind of fill that kind of space. But certainly, you know, for example, it's been found that, and I'll go to stone circles because they're obvious, but yeah. Even places of power like churches, structures, all have what we call resonant frequencies to them. And those resonant frequencies are at a specific note or specific tone. And these are to be found all around the world in sacred structures. And that specific tone, when it reaches our brain, affects our perception, affects the way we think, and affects the way we perceive in such a way that it allows us to see things in a slightly different manner. One of the main things that it does to us is it balances up the right and left side of the brain and the wave patterns between those in such a way that it takes us to a very hypnotic or hypnogenic responsive state, which is a slightly different aspect, but certainly that allows us to see and perceive things in a different way. Now, the other thing as well, if you bear in mind something we said earlier on, we've got used to not seeing things. We've got not used to not seeing, for example, the whole of the visual spectrum, either side of red and violet. We don't see the infrared. We don't see the ultraviolet light range. And yet it is still there. It's still coming into our eyes. It's still being received. We just don't in our brains say, right, that really matters. We wipe it out. The same thing goes for a huge variety of sounds, smells, all kinds of stuff. And we're used to effectively not seeing things. When we're presented with things that are there all the time, that are actually very normal as opposed to paranormal, we tend to do our best to try and work out what it is. We kind of compare patterns, if you like. We can compare patterns to things we maybe have seen before, or we compare patterns to what Jung called archetypes. And we kind of come up with responses that are, in my estimation, responses to things that are perfectly normal, kind of normal energetic things going on around us all the time. That we kind of fill the gaps, if you like, and create this very strange sort of paranormal world that is fueled by a kind of, desperate need to kind of believe, desperate need to kind of fill a spiritual void that's kind of not filled by society and religion at the moment. And I've gone off on a bit of a tangent, haven't I? I'm sorry.
No, it totally works for me. However, we do have to take a break, because during our breaks, we do things like we play independent music, cool. You know, such as, you know, we did Soul Path, you know, and so we, you know, we play independent music during our breaks. There is a break, and I don't know if it's this one or the next one. I can't remember. Scott would be, like, right on me if it were. We also have it's this one. Bonnie Bent is going to be doing
Paranormal News with Bonnie Bent. Yep.
Yes, Paranormal News with Bonnie Bent. So we're going to do a break real quick, Steve. When we come back, I want to ask more about the stone circles, the rings, and what may have happened there, and I want to ask a little bit more about the power generated, because everything has a frequency, and I know that part of any religious ritual is humming or singing or that kind of thing, and doing kind of just that. I wonder if it's in tune, and I wonder if one would sound different in different stone circles, and we're going to talk about all that after this break, Steve. Don't forget, everybody, and so hang on. Don't forget, everybody, the website is www.dragonsandrings.com, and right now we're going to go and listen, we're going to check in with Miss Bonnie Vent bringing us the paranormal news.
Ghostly Talk!
Version
3.0. Hey, it's Wolfman Mac from Wolfman Mac's Nightmare Cinema. We're hanging out at the Haunted Winery here in Warren, Michigan with the good folks from Ghostly Talk. Ooh, this place is creepy, man, but nowhere near as creepy as Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. It's a haunted drive-in, babies, and you know what we do there? We host classic B-horror and sci-fi movies, just like the ones you grew up with when you was a kid. And it's at Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema right now, hosting on public access TV all over Metro Detroit. But guess what, kiddies? It's coming to you, and all you gotta do is have a computer. Just go to Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. It's nightmarecinema.com. We'll be broadcasting the show real soon, right from the website. Stay tuned. It's Wolfman Mac, Nightmare Cinema.
Nightmare Cinema.
Welcome to Paranormal News on Ghostly Talk Radio. Paranormal News is produced by Genesis Creations Entertainment. I'm your host, Bonnie Vance. Paranormal News is sponsored by the new ebook, Is My House Haunted? A Practical Guide. Have you ever asked yourself the question, is my house haunted? Looking for a do-it-yourself way to find the answers? This ebook walks you through all the basics. There are also forms that you can fill out to log the activity and your experiences. For more information, please go to www.sdparanormal.com and look for Is My House Haunted? A Practical Guide. Our first story comes from redorbit.com. Last month, astronauts on board the International Space Station witnessed a beautiful display of noctilucent or night shining clouds. The station was located about 340 kilometers over western Mongolia on July 22nd when the crew snapped a picture. Atmospheric scientist Gary Thomas of the University of Colorado has seen thousands of noctilucent cloud photos, and he ranks this one among the best. It's lovely, he says. And it shows just how high these clouds really are at the very edge of space. He estimates the electric blue band was 83 kilometers above Earth's surface, higher than 99.999% of our planet's atmosphere. The sky at that altitude is space black. It is in the realm of meteors, high-energy auroras, and decaying satellites. What are these clouds doing there? That's what we're trying to find out, says Thomas. NASA is investigating. The Ames satellite, launched in April 2007, is now in polar orbit where it can monitor the size, shape, and icy makeup of the NLCs. The mission is still in its early stages, but already some things have been learned. Meanwhile, it's a beautiful mystery. Just ask anyone at the edge of space. Our next story comes from WSPA.com. Is Asheville High School haunted? You saw the video of the shadow creeping around the halls captured by a school surveillance camera. The school district said it couldn't explain what it was, and a paranormal expert said this one was impossible to hoax. However, another paranormal expert has come forward to say he can solve the mystery. Joe Wright is a PSI, that's Paranormal Scene Investigator. He says for more than 20 years, he has been investigating paranormal activity, and most of the time, images like the one in the video captured by the camera at Asheville High School can be explained. You're never 100% sure, but through my experiences with other anomalies, it's a bug, says Wright. What about the shadow cast on the floor? When you get the bug close to the camera, the area between the head and the body is going to appear detached because it's so much smaller an area. Wright says the fisheye camera lens also plays a role. The optics from the lens itself is going to allow an object to be distorted somewhat too. It's going to stretch it out. Like they say on the CBS show CSI, Wright says the evidence doesn't lie. Whether we prove it or disprove it, we enjoy the type that lead to the final conclusion, he says. And in this case, case closed, it's a bug. Our final story comes from TVSquad.com. CBS Ghost Whisperer is no stranger to major changes in its status quo. They wrapped up the first season by having Jennifer Love Hewitt's Melinda Gordon lose her best friend, Andrea, only to have to deal with her spirit to launch the second season. It made for an emotionally powerful episode and a tragedy that drove Melinda into that new year. Michael Osello, who is generally pretty spot on with his rumors, dropped a pretty big bombshell for some possible happenings early on in this upcoming season. The rumors are that Melinda will be losing another someone close to her. She might just become a widow. That's right, her faithful and loyal husband Jim, played by David Conrad, may be the next major character to die. This is a major change to the status quo. Jim has been Melinda's rock throughout all the craziness she's had to endure, and with Jay Moore's Professor Payne also taking a sabbatical to try his luck at his own show, Melinda's looking to have to tread those murky waters all alone. I would imagine that Jim would be a reoccurring ghost, and I could even see him refusing to go into the light because he insists on staying with Melinda. I'm not sure how long such a situation could be milked, but it could make for some interesting television. In fact, the possibilities story-wise for such a move are pretty great, but to lose Conrad and Moore at the same time pretty much leaves Mannheim's Delia as the only support structure Melinda has. For more information on these stories, please go to www.sdparanormal.com and the Paranormal News feed page. Don't forget, sign up for a free subscription to Paranormal News. Thanks for joining us today on Paranormal News. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on Paranormal News, please send us an email at parax.news@aol.com. You can listen to Paranormal News on Ghostly Talk Radio at www.ghostlytalk.com. Please check out their other fine shows. Or you can join us at paranormalnews.mypodcast.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Bonnie Vent.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk with Doug, Scott L., and Bonnie.
Ah, yes, we are talking with, we're talking with Steve Mitchell of www.dragonsandrings.com. Bonnie, of course, is thoroughly enjoying it.
Yes, I am, by the way.
She wants me to talk less and Steve to talk more.
Yes, I do.
Hey, Doug.
She wants a photo of you on... She wants a photo of you on a motorcycle in leather. So, I don't know what that means.
Or a uniform.
Or any uniform. It doesn't
matter. You're into uniform, are you? No, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to have to put... Yes.
Told you. Told you.
Hey, Doug.
Yes.
Hey,
yes,
Doug.
Scott.
I'm just talking for a second. I actually had something. I just was checking my email before the break here. And we got something kind of neat here that just came in, so I figured, you know, we should check our email more during the show.
Yeah.
Because cool stuff seems to happen, and we miss it, you know, after the show. I actually was seeing the email here, and we got an award.
Oh,
we've
wow.
We've got a few of these in the past. We've gotten a few of these in the past from groups and, you know, other people out there and whatnot. And this one, the email states, you know, Dear Ghostly Talk, we are honored to be able to bestow upon you a famously haunted award. We, as I'm sure does the whole paranormal community, appreciate all the work you have done in your field. We have added a link to your site on our award winners section of our site. And that the group, I guess, their website is myspace.com. Famously Haunted is the name of the group. And Jason Day was the gentleman who sent this to us. And we received a Famously Haunted Award from Famously Haunted, Jason Day. And he's the chief consultant over there. So thank you guys. We really appreciate that. And we'll put that up on our MySpace page or our website or something like that also. We have a section for that stuff. So we'll put that up there for you guys. And thank you, Jason. We appreciate you guys listening. And being real nice to us like that.
That is really cool. Thank you. But some of that work, though, we're going to get right down to it because Steve, we were so thank you, Famously Haunted, MySpace.com/FamouslyHaunted. We were talking to Steve, though, about the rings, right? And and every place of power has what I keyed in on, you know, was every place of power has a frequency, a note, I think you said. But I know that part of rituals, part of most rituals, and I've been to a number of different rituals, including, you know, Catholic High Mass, I've been to pagan rituals, I've been to Wiccan rituals, I've been to, you know, whatever I could possibly, you know, worm my way into just to learn about all these different things. And part of almost any ritual or celebration or whatever is going to be either music or humming. I mean, you think of the Gregorian chants, you think of even if you're just meditating, there's a branch of meditation that says you should, you know, kind of thing, the om sound for, and so you've got this thing keeps coming up and coming up and coming up over and over, even in now here for ghost hunters, because I know we're called Ghostly Talk. One of the things that people do is they try to use some kind of sound sometimes when they're doing EVPs. You'll try to use white noise, or you'll try to use, you know, pink noise, or you'll provide some kind of sound, and the Frank's box obviously is scanning. So sound and frequencies seem to pop up over and over, Steve.
You used the word, as you said, at that key. It's so important to everything we're talking about. And there's so many elements of this. Something I'll mention here, the whole kind of Dragons and Rings project, if you like, came out of probably, you know, a good 20, 30 years worth of thought. It's not something I kind of arrived at overnight. It's arrived at through kind of doing workshops, doing talks, doing all kinds of things with people over many years. I've worked as a musician, I've worked as a music therapist, and it is absolute key. One of the things we find, oh sorry, there was a reason why I was going to mention that instead of being off at a tangent for a second. It's something I actually completed, if you like, and I say completed because you never complete anything, and here's the point. I kind of put it together last year, and here we are a year later promoting something that I've now gone off and done so much more work on, putting together kind of more films, working on a book, working on other projects. One of the things that's really, really interesting is, again, if you trace back thousands of years into ancient cultures, all ancient cultures have creation myths, and there are two elements of those creation myths that are super important. The first is that they all agree with quantum science that the universe is a, if you like, an energetic being, an energetic thing, an energetic basis for the material. They all conclude the same thing, whether you're looking at Pythagorean thought, whether you're looking at Egyptian thought, which precludes anyway the Pythagorean thought, whether you're looking at Indian thought, whether you're looking at Australian, Babylonian, all across the world, they all have the same concepts. Slightly different languages, but they're all describing this, they say the same thing. The second thing they describe is sound. And sound, as you are well aware, again, is an important part of creation myths. For example, in the Christian creation myth, God spoke, you know, there's this kind of speaking, there's the word of God as part of the creation of the universe. And a lot of creation myths actually have particular words. You mentioned om. Om, again, is one of the kind of creative words, the word that created the universe itself, created life. The Egyptians have their own word. I can't remember them because I have a memory like a sieve, and I'm downstairs at the moment, and the computer's upstairs, and I can't be bothered to run upstairs and check it out because I'm nicely ensconced with a cup of tea and a kind of half a glass of beer at the moment. But nevertheless, the other thing about it is not only the word, but the tone. They all believe that there's a particular tone, and hence we have our ritualistic basis, our ritualistic singing, our ritualistic toning. doesn't come in because we think, oh yeah, it's a nice idea to have a bit of a sing-song, you know. It comes in because the belief that creation, the creative process, comes through energy and comes through energy in the form of sound. And that's really, really important because we all have a kind of mishmash of what we think energy is. If you ask people what energy is, you'll get so many different answers. And at the end of the day, energy is everything you say it is, because it is electricity, it is magnetism, it is light, it is sound, and at the key root of it all, it's all of those. And what we're seeing is light, what we're hearing is sound, what we're feeling is pressure, is just one element, if you like, one dimension of the energy of the universe. And so the key between all of that is frequency, because frequency allows us to take one form of energy and turn it into another. And that's really, really important. And another thing that's important in there is something called carrier waves. If you hum a tone, and you kind of put it out there, you're putting a pure frequency there. However, as you're humming, you're probably vibrating a little bit. So that tone not only has a specific frequency, but it has a slight rhythm within it as well. And the rhythm itself will also be at a frequency. Now, if you add words into that frequency, into that tone, so you're singing words, you're now starting to do three things. First of all, you've got the frequency of the tone you're singing. Secondly, you've got the frequency of the rhythm of the words that you're singing in that tone. So the frequency, if you like, has become a carrier wave for the rhythm, but it also becomes a carrier wave for the words themselves. So the words start to have import and impact. Now, if that frequency is a very specific frequency, i.e. it is at a frequency that is recognized by the brain, and not only recognized by the brain, but affects the way we think, i.e. going back to what I said earlier on, it is a frequency which equalizes and balances the way the brain works, and also puts it into this receptive state. You've got a tone which creates a receptive state in anyone who's listening. That tone becomes a frequency, becomes a carrier wave for a new frequency, which is the rhythm. And finally, it also becomes a carrier wave, a way of, if you like, imparting a new message in the way the words go in. So those words become really important. So if you're in a receptive state, in a space that has a particular frequency already, and you are harmonizing within that frequency in that space, whether it's a church, whether it's a pyramid, whether it's a burial mound, whatever. And there are two tones, by the way. I'll tell you about those in a second. And you start using particular what you might call words of power. This is where all these kind of amazing words come from. Those words are going to have impact on us. They're going to change the way we think. You can, for example, use them to affect the way the group that are there thinks. You can affect the way they believe. You can affect the way they behave. You can effectively control your population. And if you bear in mind the main aim of religion is to work alongside government, i.e. to control a populace, to control a group of people, then you have an ideal setting to effectively impart the message that you want those people not only to hear, but to believe, that actually becomes part of their, if you like, psychic, their physical, their emotional structure, their emotional being. It's a bit like hypnotism. It's a bit like neuro-linguistic programming. You're effectively using a space in a very, what you might call, magic or psychological kind of manner to change people.
And that's interesting because you can, that's obviously all with sound and frequency and energy of that sort, but when you do a movie, okay, this is what I'm coming up with. I know, because the whole reason you're on is because you did this wonderful movie, but the thing is, I know that's kind of a it sounds cheap and tawdry, but it's not. This is so powerful. I remember somebody telling me that they drove by a movie theater once, and it was the Roseville Theater down. It's no longer a theater, but it used to be a theater known world renowned for its popcorn. Right? It was supposedly fabulous, and they could actually feel the energy coming from it. Okay, now that's really interesting because I had just sort of tucked that away in the back of my head. I didn't even think about it. But when you create something like a movie and you put a bunch of people into a place and they're all facing the screen and of course all the speakers are all around them now and now it's all Dolby THX and all surround sound and you know super stereo and all this stuff and they sometimes you can even feel the vibrations of the air because it's an enclosed theater, it's dark, and then they've got the screen lights up. You've got you know, visual frequencies, you've got light, you've got, you know, imagery, you've got all this stuff going on, you've got sound going on around you, and you've got the people in the theater reacting to all of this pretty much simultaneously, you know, and really you're sort of controlling them, or is it the other way around? I mean, it's going to be really interesting because when you add in, if you take all the stuff that you talked about with the sound and the home and the place of power and then the people together and they're doing, you know, this stuff, add in the visual element and the emotional story, so you've got emotions going as well, you're really creating a very powerful vibration, and now I can sort of see why that person felt the energy from the theater.
Yeah. You're creating a reality. That's what you're truly doing. Because, like you say, sound isn't something you just hear. It is something that you physically feel because it is a vibration. And we feel vibrations. This is what people don't figure. We feel vibrations. We you know, a lot of, if you like, psychics, people like that, talk about energy that they can feel in terms of the aura, that they can kind of feel the colors, maybe. We do. We sense things on a far greater range than we think. Sound isn't just something we feel. Funnily enough, the eyes, for example, are designed to pick up light, but they are also designed to pick up sound to a certain extent. And the vibration of sound going into the eyes stimulates the eyes, so it can cause visuals. And so effectively, any energy affects other energy and creates and changes energy. And like you say, you get this kind of physical thing where you're feeling it in terms of actual, you know, sensing it in terms of physical there. You get the sound of it, you get the light of it, and you get the emotional content with it. And with all of that piling up on top of itself, whoever is, if you like, organizing that energy, organizing that sound, organizing that light, organizing those visuals, has great power over whoever is being presented with that media. And we get it day in, day out. We get it on television, we get it on the films, we're presented with concepts that are designed to affect us, whether it's through advertising, whether it's through the way that, you know, the government may well use certain music or certain visuals in terms of their promotion, their kind of propaganda tool. But this isn't something that's just happened in this century. This is something that goes way back to the year dot, when man first started changing his landscape, acknowledging that the landscape affected him, and therefore saying, well, hey, if this landscape affects us, we're part of the landscape. Then if we change that landscape, if we input into that landscape on as many levels as we can, visually, orally, through sound, through feeling, through touch, through everything, then we're going to be able to change the people that are part of that landscape, and therefore we're going to be able to change their reality. And that's, you know, what we're doing effectively. That's what's happening.
And nobody understands this concept better than the Disney Corporation, because they're doing all of these things we're talking about with Miley Cyrus, a.k.a. Hannah Montana. I mean, how can you believe that one little girl is two people? I don't know. It's got to be all this power that they are harnessing and brainwashing us with. No, you guys.
You did not really just go there, did you?
I really did say that name.
Wow.
I want to thank Doug for going there, actually.
Yeah, Doug, just run that past me again, because I missed that totally. Who, what, which, where?
I said nobody understands these concepts better than the Disney Corporation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because of
film you're talking about?
Because of Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus, it's the same person, but they're anyway. It was just a poke. It was poking fun, you know.
Okay. That's all
right. Because I asked
you. Just Google it, Steve. Just Google it.
Hannah Montana.
Yeah, okay.
No, I'm serious. On the way here, I stopped at 7-Eleven, and there's actually a thing called Concert Candy. It's gummy bears with Hannah Montana's face on the packaging. So you're supposed to want those gummy bears instead of other gummy bears, because these are her gummy bears. I don't know. It's really freaky, but okay.
I'll go buy those to choke myself with.
No, I'll do it for free.
This has gone way out of control.
It does, no.
See, I don't say anything for an hour, and this is what happens.
That's what advertising is about, isn't it? It's about attacking our senses, attacking them with as many things as you can to persuade us to buy that one little thing that you want us to buy, you know, and attacking us on an emotional level, on a physical level, to a point where we're almost experiencing what they want us to experience in that brief 30 seconds, so that we will go and buy their product. And it works.
It certainly does.
It must do, because they won't be spending millions on it, would they?
They're definitely doing
that. They come up with a better way, like actually making a good product for a start.
Do you know, I would like gummy bears that are good for you. That's what I'd like. They need to make them out of Diet Pepsi.
Yeah.
Those would be nasty.
Soy gummy bears.
Oh, bears. Gross. Oh.
You guys, we have 2 minutes left. Steve, I have to say, excellent job. The movie, Dragons and Rings, can be found undoubtedly at dragonsandrings.com, right?
Yes, you can find it all over the place. Dive onto Google, you'll find it everywhere. Go on to Amazon, you can buy it from Amazon. You can go to the Reality Entertainment site, that's www.reality-entertainment.com. I forget the amount of websites it's available on if you want to buy it. Barnes & Noble, I think. You just pop your PayPal details in or whatever you use over there, and go and get it.
That is just absolutely amazing.
I should have sung that, yes. Dragons and Rings is a wonderful film. Have you got it now?
I like it.
You better watch out or you're going to be hired by Disney. And then
it's like, food, it's good for you. Eat some today.
Steve,
get some now. Go on.
Dragons and Rings, nibbly bits. Concert candy. You guys. Okay, we
do
are
not
outside.
Call it nibbly bits. Do not.
Look, if our sales don't go up after today, I'm going to blame you guys.
Tater bits.
We have to go to break. Steve, hang on the line. Just hang on the line for another minute. Oh my gosh. Steve Mitchell of DragonsandRings.com. He did a fantastic film called Dragons and Rings. I want you to Google it. I want you to go to Amazon. Do whatever. DragonsandRings.com and get it, because they're really, literally, there are like 7 topics that we didn't even touch. The whole thing is about quantum.
God.
It's about quantum theory, and we didn't even get to that. So, Steve.
We didn't get to quantum. Real quantum. True quantum. Real quantum.
Exactly. And the quantum mechanics of Hannah Montana, we totally missed all of that. But we do have to go to break, because we do independent music during the break. We've done Soul Path before. Them on, of course, you know, so we have to do that. We want the bands to get out there, and everybody enjoy that. Coming up next, and thank you, Steve, it's marvelous,
that's
but do right. hang on the line for one more moment. Andy and Tanya Kaiser coming up from Zero Productions. They're not as hot as you.
They're smoking hot.
They are smoking hot.
I love them.
And we're going to be talking about our little film that we did. It's a comedy. It's definitely not as serious.
Nowhere near as serious.
We didn't think about
Although
any
I
of
think
it.
We should hire Steve to do promotion for us.
I think
I'll do that. I'll sing your title track.
That'll be great.
We have the voice
I
for it.
No.
I'm just going to break you guys. I'm going to bring the volumes off and just click on these buttons, you guys. We'll be back with Andy and Tanya Kaiser.
Miss a live broadcast? feel free to download it direct from the on-demand archives at ghostlytalk.com.